This is the Live to Tape Show, episode 13. In this episode, we discuss me being a moron for not understanding what ice means, Belgium, borders, Arby's, and breastfeeding, and we finish up with a game of chart toppers focused on 1988 through 90. Thanks for listening. It's your Live to Tape Show. This is Candid Comedy with two hosts, too much nostalgia, and too little therapy. I'm one of your hosts, Tanner.
I am your other host, Chris, back and on the attack!
And we were just talking about a lot of controversy surrounding the last episode. If you listen to Totally Tanner, I think it was volume 4, I told a story about a human resources person at my work, just your standard chick. She was on a bus with me, and I oversaw that she was talking to someone on her phone named Ice in all capitals. My mind ran wild with this, and maybe a little bit too wild, because very quickly I had someone email me and ruin the mystery about this.
I just want to know what you thought Ice looked like.
I kind of described it. With most things in life, when I try to imagine some mysterious person, it basically is always Brian Bosworth.
see, I went the opposite way. Well, not opposite, but I was thinking an American Gladiator, but also mixed with like Busta Rhymes.
Yeah, that's a good hybrid. We were kind of on the same page. Brian Bosworth was kind of the template for most American Gladiators.
That's true, yeah.
He was the originator. But I'm sure everyone but me realizes that I guessed ICE stands for in case of emergency. I didn't know this.
I did.
Here's the thing, though. This is what annoys me about it. Listen, I'm a fairly intelligent person. I've never heard that before. And if you're going to use an acronym, you want to use something, you know, she could have a heart attack on that bus and I'm the person grabbing the phone. Instead of ICE, it would be better if it said boyfriend, husband, wife, or whatever.
There was a terrible chain email circulating around, and it has caught on, actually, that if you ever are dead and you cannot contact somebody, paramedics will go into your phone or whoever, you know, I don't know, cops.
Wait, so if you're ever dead and incapable of contacting, if yeah. ever those two things, that those two extraordinary coincidences would ever happen.
You have to keep in mind, you could be a part of a seance in the immediate moment.
If there is a necromancer nearby, if you happen to be in Skyrim and you get raised from the dead. And then you call your emergency contact, and you're just like, holy shit, you are not going to believe this. I'm a ghost.
Yeah, you ain't seen shit until you've seen this. Afterlife. This is crazy.
I'm harvesting souls. I'm eating people's minds like candy.
No, but it was an email that circulated. I swear this is where it began, but listeners, correct me if I'm wrong, because it could honestly be one of those things that originated from police sources. You know, some local police department was like, put in ICE on your phone. Either way, it made its rounds through the old people of the internet, and that's how I got it, because the old people of the internet contact me constantly.
Old people of the internet are like the dark matter of the universe. They're this secret thing.
They weigh it all down.
they weigh it all down, but they also, they're the foundation upon which all of the internet operates.
Yeah. So that's why I knew what it was, because my parents and their, well, you know, listen, this isn't a Chris's parents episode, but they both have their ICE numbers.
Of course. Like, that's immediately, friend of the show, Carl, was the one who brought this to my attention through email. And I immediately thought, I was like, you know what? I guarantee Chris's yep. parents have ICE in their phones. It just seems like a preparedness thing. They would be all over.
You know what the sad part is that my dad's ICE is my mom, and my mom's ICE is my dad. If they both die together, their ICEs are just...
It's a closed loop.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, This is belaboring the point here. You are back from your... Wait, no! I don't even want to get into your European vacation yet, because...
Yeah, who does?
Do you know what episode number this is?
Is this Baker's Dozen?
This is the Baker's Dozen episode.
Whoa!
A milestone. And another milestone being your return from Europe. This is your first time overseas. What do you have to report?
Nothing.
All right. So wait, nothing of consequence happened.
No, actually, listen, I could tell you about how Europeans are amazing and how, oh, they can all speak so many languages because I spoke only one and they were so kind to me to, you know, talk to me in my native tongue. I could tell you about how their cities are beautifully constructed and there's so much history, but I won't tell you any of that because it's not true. When I was in Brussels, that place looked as graffitied. Graffitied? Is that the word? Graffitied?
I guess. You're conjugating street words.
I was just talking about how they spoke my native tongue. They could probably do it better than I'm doing right now.
So you found Europe to be a huge letdown, basically.
No, actually. There were a few places that were amazing. But I will say Brussels is an awesome town, but you might as well be in Oakland.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be, you know, diminutive. I loved it in Brussels. And so did my traveling partner.
Who just happened to be Jean-Claude Van Damme. The ideal...
The muscles.
Yeah. Traveling partner.
When we traveled between... between Mack trucks and did the splits on our way through every town.
You actually got hooked up with him through Groupon. You paid like $250 and spent a weekend with
that's right.
JCVD in Brussels.
That's right. He was my couch surfing pal. And Brussels is a great city. It's this cool mixture of very old shit. Like older than anything we know in America, and then America meaning the only America, not South or the United States is what I mean. And then as you walk through the city, I want to make it clear, what is great about the town is that it is graffitied. It is awesome that a town that old has to sustain like punks and shitheads who fuck with old timey shit.
We're so used to graffiti being on relatively modern buildings, but there you've got graffiti on some 17th century architectural masterpiece, and someone just writes on the side of it like
skunk. Yeah, somebody just writes skunk on the side. And the thing is like eight dudes took over that cathedral back in like 1482, and some punk kid today wrote skunk on it. You know, I love that though. That's why I will recommend to anyone, go to Brussels. It's awesome. Just head out there. It's a cool town. They only have like 5 beers on tap at any given time. It is totally different actually than the United States when it comes to beer drinking, which is weird because you would imagine that Europe would, you would imagine that Belgium would be so big on microbreweries or maybe even importing stuff. But I think the microbrew trend is truly American. If I can say, I don't know if I can say that.
I think so. I wouldn't know, but I think it is actually.
In my experience when I was out there, it was literally like you can get Leffe or whatever it is, L-E-F-F-E, like Ho Garden or whatever the fuck you call that, and the like 3 other, like Bodinger's or something like that. And every so often you could get a Guinness or something. But
And those are all major beers, too. None of those are microbrews.
If they're sponsors of a team that plays football, aka soccer, in the United States, it's not the same as, you know, some guy brewing beer well, or some group of guys brewing beer at a brewery, you know, and I know they have some ancient breweries and whatnot, but I didn't encounter any of that.
It's so interesting that we fetishize all that stuff. You're like, oh, Belgian beers. And yeah. Look at all the, and then you actually go to the place and like, fuck all that. Mm-hmm. We don't care. We just want your standard beer.
When I was getting processed in, which takes all of 2 seconds.
What is that? Were they? Did you have like a chemical shower and a delousing?
Well, with Ebola on the rise, of course. Yeah, yeah. We had to be shaven and shorn, but
like a sheep for your pubes, a sheep shearer.
I already trimmed down before, just in case, you know. When we got processed in, the guy asked us, why are we coming to Belgium? And I said, you know, for leisure. What are you supposed to say when immigration is asking why you're coming? I'm coming here to hang out, you dumbass. I'm not here to do business. I guess you'd see me in a business suit. Right. I was wearing the most lackadaisical jeans you've ever seen in your life. I'm not here for business. I'm here for pleasure. And so I walk through, and this guy, his last words to me were, watch out for our beer. It's very strong. And I was like, I can handle it.
Who do you think I am?
Yeah. Did you not know a drunk was coming to your country?
Have you ever had one of those guys give you the business? Like, really?
Well, in Canada, for sure.
Yeah. It's a very weird experience when that happens. Like, suddenly you start to, they inculcate you and they start to make you feel like a villain. You start feeling guilty mm-hmm. about stuff.
Going through Canada, I was going through Sarnia, of all places. Sarnia is, for those who don't know, not, it's kind of a backwater area compared to Windsor, which is right across from Detroit, which is, you know, still a built-up urban area. So we're crossing over there, and they asked me, do you own any guns? I say no. They said, do you ever shoot guns? I say no. They said,
have you ever been near a gun?
Which I would have said yes had they asked that. But then they said, do you know our gun laws? And I said, I think.
What is this, a naturalization test?
So wait. They said, do you know our gun laws? And I said, I think I do. Because they should be like, don't shoot people in the face. Don't own a gun if you don't have a license. You know,
they usher you over and they're like, you've been deputized. Here's your badge. Here's the gun. Listen, there's a band of outlaws on the loose.
They were looking for a sheriff. So they ask me all those questions, and then they say, do you know what our laws are? And I say, I think so. They're probably like what they are in Michigan. And the guy goes, what are they? Like, how do you answer that question? What are they?
You pull up a chair.
Section 2, code 3. Paragraph 4 states explicitly that I was going to Stratford. I was going to watch plays. Like, I was going for the theater.
I ran into a similar situation where it was Canada as well. And I was coming, mm-hmm. I think, out of Canada into the U.S. And the guy started asking me about my work. And it's at that point where you're thinking, oh, do I go really general? Do I go more specific here? And I ended up going too specific, and it just created more and more questions. And he's digging into like the details of my job and asking me in-depth mm-hmm. questions about education and pedagogical philosophy and all this shit. And there's this big ass line behind me, and you know, On the huge desk of agents there, people are just blowing through. And meanwhile, I'm sitting there with this guy talking about student-centered education.
Do you think he just, he was a guy out of place? Like, he really wanted to be in your position and just wanted to pick your brain because that would make him happy for
I'm reflecting back on it. I think that he was just bored, but the look on his face was so serious and stern that I felt like I was being attacked, and I'm like, what the? I think the key with those things is to be really general and just yes. all business and just be like one word answers.
Yeah, you don't give specifics. And I will say also, speaking of coming back from Canada, it helps to work where I work, because one of the best experiences I've ever had was coming over the bridge from Windsor. And I was with an ex-girlfriend of mine, and we were carrying back like mannequins and weird stuff that you would never carry in your car. But I drove, and the guy was like, what do you do? And I said what I do. And he was like, do you guys have any jobs available? He wanted out of his job. He was so sick. He was so sick of his job. And I was like, nah, we're not hiring. He was like, all right, go on through. That was the end of it.
Met you in a hurricane off coastal France in the blank Mediterranean. They were listening to awful trance, and I got my mom on Medicaid. The forms came in.
As usual, I've got breaking food news.
Wait, why is it food news?
Because that seems to be my forte for the news, or just in any segment, is bringing up shitty restaurants and American eateries.
It's terrible, though, because I have food news, so we both have food news today.
Arby's.
Oh, no. Are they getting rid of something? They can't afford to get rid of something anymore.
I think this might be their last ditch effort to stay above water. They've been treading water and I think sinking for a while now. I went to an Arby's maybe 4 to 5 months ago. I had to get on the BART and go the opposite way out of town. Like I had to go into the dark trenches of the Bay Area.
So you had a purpose when you got on the BART. Which was Arby's.
There was just one weekend where I was like, I hate myself, and I want to make myself feel horrible.
You needed a Jamocha shake.
So I'm going to go, like Apocalypse Now, I'm going to go deep into the jungle and face off with my nemesis. Oh, and I went to an Arby's, and I was alone in there. And it was there's nothing sadder than going to an Arby's and being the only one dining in alone.
hang on though. I think that that is now, I think that dining in at a fast food restaurant is no longer cool.
Oh, it's not. Yeah, I observe this because there's a couple fast food places on my block, and I'm up and down that block all the time. And it seems like people are so ashamed of themselves for eating fast food because there's such a stigma around it, especially in an area like I live in, that everyone goes drive through. There's a giant line in drive through, and then the inside is just empty.
Listen, I was in Brussels, where you should be eating good cuisine, and I walked by a McDonald's, and I was appalled that there were, like, two people just sitting in a McDonald's in Brussels. Now, maybe they have their reasons for it. I don't know what those reasons might be. All I know is, why are they in a McDonald's? Is it that good?
There's one big reason, and that's the Filet-O-Fish.
I swear to God they were not eating Filet-O-Fish.
They should have been.
They were feasting on quarter pounders, no question.
So anyway, Arby's now has a secret menu item a la In-N-Out.
Ooh.
And this secret menu item is called the Meat Mountain.
Wait, but Arby's only roasts beef. That's all they do.
No, apparently. So what happened was Arby's is trying to broaden their market by reminding people, I guess, that they actually serve things beyond roast beef. I guess they have turkey sandwiches, chicken sandwiches, and whatever the hell.
Well, they went to like this sort of what's the word? Like a not a gourmet
like
lunch,
a
but
deli, like a boar's
yeah, a deli,
place,
exactly,
yeah.
A deli. Yeah.
So there, I guess they created a poster that was, you know, a big, long, skinny poster. You know, and it just is a sandwich with two buns and just all the different meats they have stacked on each other. And
is that on the menu?
No, it was just was like a gimmicky thing. Like, hey, look at how ridiculous this looks. All this meat stacked up on two buns. This is all of our offerings. Well, what happened was
that was literally them saying, this is all we have left. Come get it. We have no other meat.
And it was purposefully supposed to be ridiculous looking, like that, you know, this is nothing anyone would ever eat. Well, dumbasses went into, you know, saw this poster, went into Arby's, were like, I want that.
But that's what I would do. I want the everything. Give me the all. I would call that the all in.
Yeah.
I want the all in Arby.
Well, they hadn't intended on serving the all in, what they call the meat mountain, but because people started requesting it, they embraced it, and now if you go to Arby's and you say, I want a meat mountain, they'll now take a bun, slap on, here's the list of things you get in your meat mountain.
Oh my God.
So you get roast beef, cheese, Angus steak, brisket, corned beef, cheese, ham, turkey, chicken tenders in between two buns.
Oh my God. See, in that sentence, if you carved a few things out, so to speak, you would have something gourmet that you would get in Europe. But because you add it all in, it becomes American. It's now just this disgusting Frankenstein of meat. It's disgusting to me.
So there's only been a few reports of these out in the wild, but they have been served. And there's a picture I'm looking at here of it. There's the official promotional picture, which it looks like about a foot tall. But if you actually order it, you know, they only put on one or two slices of each ingredient. So it ends up not quite fitting in your typical Big Mac cardboard carton. It's about that size. But it does exist. And here, how many calories do you think is in a meat mountain, Chris?
Well... What are we supposed to have? About 1,500 to 2,000 a day.
Yeah.
One meat mountain. If you gave me a meat mountain.
And we're not even counting your soda or your fries here.
Right. Well, if I had a meat mountain, I would make sure the rest of my day was calorie free.
You would have a reservation in one place.
I think a meat mountain has to at least be, let's say, 1,400 calories.
You're really close. You're about 300 calories too high. It comes in at 1,120 calories.
That's it, though. Like, what do you do for the rest of your day?
But this writer here, this is on thewire.com, they report that this is actually less than a Chipotle burrito. So a meat mountain is actually a healthy option if you're normally eating at Chipotle.
And, you know, if you're a fitness buff, Chipotle is where you go because you can order off the menu and you can just say, I just want chicken.
Yeah, you can just get chicken in a slop bucket, and
that's right.
Yeah,
so
that's
Chipotle.
I think that's even sadder than a meat mountain to me. It's like you go to Chipotle, well, just get a bunch of cubed chicken in a tray, and you just sit there with your protein shake.
I agree. Now, speaking of protein shakes, I have a story. Well, no, this is a sad story. It's coming out of Ferguson, and I know you talked about it a lot. Listen, we are all in solidarity with the people of Ferguson.
And by the people of Ferguson, we mean the police.
I was going to say the blacks.
Wait, who are we in solidarity with? Darren Wilson and the police department. You know, they're trying their damnedest to keep that town in line. They're true American heroes.
It's strange because I was there back in 97.
Really?
It looked like, yeah, it looked like a normal place. I don't know.
What the fuck were you there for?
A journalism conference.
Oh my God.
Not in Ferguson. I was in St. Louis.
St. Louis.
We took a train out to Ferguson. So anyway, I decided that I was going to look at, you know, what news is going on in Ferguson, not just national news, but what is going on in Ferguson itself.
What are the important stories?
Right.
That the, you know, the liberal media is trying to tell you that this murder of a black man is important, but what's really going on?
Sure. I mean, Ma Bray is rocking on her chair a little bit too cozily. She'll be dead in 2 weeks. You know, that's what I imagine would be on. What are you doing? Throwing bottle caps? What's going on?
I'm just playing a game of bottle caps. You ever play that?
Never. Anyway, I was reading the latest in Ferguson, and I thought that listeners should know because we didn't report on this before I left. But
there go my bottle caps again.
What are you doing? Is that for your cat?
It's this new version of Pogs I'm inventing with bottle caps.
It involves an entire apartment space.
You use an Arby's beef and cheddar as a slammer, and you put a bunch of bottle caps on the ground.
I'm trying to report some serious news here. Ferguson is alive and well. But the only way it's alive and well is because this month is National Breastfeeding Month.
Yay!
And I wanted to tell you that according to the local Ferguson, whatever they call themselves, the Journal or the August is National Breastfeeding Month. So
that's the extent of it.
They talk to people who live in Ferguson. They're like, yeah, you know, I enjoy breastfeeding. There have been thousands of studies during the past 50 years that confirms that babies are healthier when they're breastfed. Because we're a candid podcast, I wasn't breastfed. Were you?
Yes, I believe so.
Oh my God, you were so lucky. I didn't get to taste.
tell me what it was like.
I tasted tip for the first time when I was 18. What was it like when you were 3 or 2 or 1? How long did it last? I don't know. I got formula is what I'm saying, people. How long were you breastfed for?
Like, I know. I don't know. Till I was 4, like everybody else?
What? That's... That's too long.
At what age do you enter into preschool? Because it was right after that. Because I remember my mom having to come to preschool and take me out of class
and give you breast milk
and sit me in the hallway. Actually, she would just sit. She would just come into class and I would just sit on her lap while, you know, during story time or whatever. While the other kids were drinking their Yoo-Hoos and eating their orange slices.
See, that was me because I got nothing. I drank formula and then I entered straight into kindergarten. I bypassed all preschool whatever, you know, notions that you had. But
do you have any idea why your mom made that choice? What was the thought behind it? Was it a medical issue or?
Yeah, well, there's, I don't know the reason, but I know that there is a reason and I can't tell you. Not because I can't, but because I seriously don't know.
Yeah.
But that's the choice that they made. I think it was a doctor's, you know, order sort of thing. Like, you can't breastfeed this kid, at least. I have no idea about my brother.
Breastfeeding to me seems like one of the cooler aspects of being a mother. The thought of that you are producing sustenance for a being that you birthed.
To play devil's advocate, imagine letting a small alien suck your tit until it was raw and dry. That's the worst part, I think, of breastfeeding for most women. I don't know, though. Women of the show, write in and let us know if you've ever been sucked so dry.
Everybody that listens to this show is barren.
But that's why I think they invented like milk, like pumps, you know, for ladies, so they can pump it at their leisure. The kid doesn't have to suck on the actual nipple. Like, the pump does the thing for the lady. The kid gets the milk. End of story. We're done. But if you let the kid latch on, you're in for a world of hurt.
Yeah, it's like a Doberman pincher grabbing on your forearm. Like,
that's right. That nip is going to get snipped. You're just not going to have the same nip you had before. I don't like that idea. I have sensitive nipples.
You might orgasm. And that's got to get creepy when your child is giving you an orgasm.
What if that happened? That has to have happened.
It has to. What? Oh, God.
I'm going to say it, and you can cut it from the show if you want. But what if you slowly lower the kid to a different...
Yeah, what if you're a fucking horrible person who needs to be put in jail?
And you lower the kid to a part of your body that shouldn't be sucked. But, oh my God, I'm dying. Oh, God. Oh, so it's National Breastfeeding Month.
And that's the top story on the Ferguson Register.
That's
you
right.
Have to go about four pages deep to find out anything about the Michael Brown murder.
It's page six. It's their most tempting page.
All right, we'll be back with our wild card segment, and I'm going to continue to play bottle caps.
I hear it.
So in our last double team episode, regular live to tape show episode 12, we played Chart Toppers, our favorite game, where I pull the top grossing movies, the top five movies of a particular weekend in a particular year. And Chris does the same for hit singles. And we pulled the years in the last segment, 1985, 1986, and 1987. And this week, we are pulling the years 88, 89, and 90 of just this past weekend. So what was that? Around August?
I actually chose ahead of time because it would have been... August 27th is what I chose.
So I've got a smattering since, you know, months change and all of that. My first weekend would be August 19th through 21st, 1988, okay, at the box office. Chris, do you want to start us off with the hit singles of 1988? The tail end of summer, 1988. These were your Billboard Hot 100.
Hot 100, here we go. August 27, 1988.
And I should say that what we do is, so he'll give me a random assortment of the top five, and I've got to choose what I think was the number one song this weekend.
So I almost wish you would have, we had done this about 24 days ago, because some of these songs I don't really know, to be honest, but 24 days ago, That's how volatile that market is. Like, you get a slot, and then you're in it, and then you're usurped by one song. So here are your choices. I Don't Want to Go On With You Like That, Elton John. I don't know that song.
I don't want to go on with you like that. Oh.
Oh, yeah, that's okay.
You know.
All right, so that's one of your choices. Monkey by George Michael.
I don't know that one.
Me neither.
And I'm kind of a George Michael aficionado.
All right, but that's a song in the top five.
That's giving that I'm using that information here. I'm not putting that on my top.
However, get ready because you have two songs coming up that are very difficult. Sweet Child O' Mine by Guns N' Roses.
Sweet Child O' Mine.
That was my best impression. I Don't Want to Live Without Your Love, Chicago. I am going to go on record as saying I hate Chicago, but I love Peter Cetera. I think he was in Chicago. I'm not sure.
He definitely was, and that's kind of strange. I don't know how you could like one and not the other.
I don't like Chicago. I like Peter Cetera is where it comes. That's it. What do you want from me? I don't like Chicago. I remember being on a trip to Toronto, a bus trip, through school, and a kid was listening to Chicago, and I said, why don't you listen to Boston?
It's another city band
name. Yeah, exactly. All right, last song. Ooh, this will be a tough one. Simply Irresistible, Robert Palmer.
Okay. Things just got tough with those last three.
Should I repeat? It's I Don't Want to Go On With You Like That by Elton John. Monkey by George Michael. Sweet Child O' Mine, Guns N' Roses. I Don't Want to Live Without Your Love, Chicago. And Simply Irresistible, Robert Palmer.
Do you know that Chicago song? Can you sing that one?
No,
I don't either. So that's another indication. So I'm going to throw Monkey and I Don't Want to Live Without Your Love out because I just don't know them. And I'm going to say that I was aware enough that I knew what the number one single was. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. I think I'm going to go.
It's so impossible, dude.
I'm of the mind. Games should be hard, goddammit.
But I'm telling you, I know what your number one and two is. Number one is going to be Simply Irresistible. Number two is going to be Sweet Child of Mine. I think that's what you're going to choose. Tell me, though.
Oh, man.
Chicago is huge. 1988, Chicago is huge.
So is Elton John.
He
massive.
Was going crazy. George Michael is out of his mind in 88.
But wait, so did we ever discuss how the Hot 100 is determined? Is this airplay?
I have no idea.
Or sales?
I think this is airplay.
We're going to go airplay.
This is what people are listening to. So it's the Hot 100.
I'm going to go Simply Irresistible.
And you would be wrong.
I saw that one coming.
But you were right because it should have. It was between. I gave clues of what it should have been, which is Sweet Child of Mine and Simply Irresistible are amazing songs. Everything else on this list sucks to me. Monkey by George Michael. I don't know it. Which means I know George Michael.
Yeah, me too.
But that was number one.
Holy shit.
Number two was I Don't Want to Go On With You Like That.
I can see that.
Elton John always cracks the top five.
Yeah, yeah. He's got such broad appeal.
Yeah. But three was I Don't Want to Live Without Your Love, Chicago. Four was Sweet Child of Mine. And five was Simply Irresistible.
Oh, wow. All right, I beefed it on that one. Let's see if you can do better. These are your top five movies of the weekend of August 19th through 21st in the wonderful year of 1988. We've got some amazing movies on this list. First up, Die Hard.
Oh, shit. My parents went and saw that movie, which is rare. They had to get babysitters and stuff.
Probably the best Christmas movie of all time. It came out in the summer.
88 was also the same year that Willow and what else came out that year? Coming to America came out that year. Anyway,
that is that's number 9 on the list.
Oh shh, number 9.
Yeah.
Damn.
All right, let's continue with the list. We got Die Hard. We've got another holiday classic, but a Halloween classic. Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
Then we've got one of my favorites. I owned it on VHS, Young Guns.
Oh, shit.
Kevin Klein hit A Fish Called Wanda.
That's a huge... I hate to break it to everybody, but that's a huge hit. And I hate it, but it...
It was a big movie.
Yeah.
Last movie, another one of my favorite movies, a movie I will always watch on cable, Cocktail. So we've got Die Hard, Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master, Young Guns, Fish Called Wanda, Cocktail. Which one of those was number one in 1988?
Final answer, Cocktail. It could have been Nightmare on Elm Street.
You couldn't have been more wrong because Cocktail's... Okay. Cocktail's number 5.
Shit!
We are neck and neck right now. We both guessed the number 5.
I thought moms would be out in droves to go see Cocktail.
This one was really hard because it's actually Nightmare on Elm Street. That was number 1 because it debuted that weekend.
Oh, see, this is why it's so hard because
I know.
You don't know. I can't tell you when Nightmare on Elm Street came out.
See, but the thing is, if I gave you how many weeks they were in, it would probably make it a little bit too easy, you know?
Listen, same goes for your next 5 that I'm going to give you.
All right, give them to me.
All right, here we go. Don't Want to Lose You, Gloria Estefan.
Oh, she's back!
She's back and on the attack! She has not lost a year so far.
By the way, they're making a musical...
I heard about that.
Of her and her husband's story coming from Cuba and becoming hit makers stateside.
I'm for it because I think she's a great woman, unless you know other information that I don't.
She is a rapist, so. She's actually I have great information that she was breastfeeding once and she took her baby
and
slowly moved that baby down.
Dipped it down.
Dip.
Down to the trench.
She was an innovator in both music and breastfeeding.
On our own, Bobby Brown. I have to tell you, though, that's from Ghostbusters 2.
I know, but I love that song.
Because it's got such a driving, like... Like,
oh, it's
I can't
a great
even...
song.
Right Here Waiting, Richard Marx.
Oh, another great
song. I know! Cold Hearted, Paula Abdul.
This list.
And here we go. Get ready. Hangin' Tough. Hang it.
Shit.
New Kids. NKOTB! New Kids on the Block.
This might be the hardest choice I've ever had to make. In my mind, Richard Marx, Paul Abdul, or New Kids could easily, any of those could be number one.
Now, this is August 26th of 1989. So, are New Kids on the Block really the new kids that can usurp a master? Are they a Padawan?
I feel like at this point in time, they are truly the new kids on the block in 1989. It's not until 91 do they crest.
Ooh, that's not right? True because Nickelodeon came to my school, even though I wasn't there, but a friend of the show, Eric, can talk more about it. NKOTB came to my elementary school. I was going to name the elementary school. I don't want to name it. But
no, you don't want anyone to know anything else about you after you just endorsed using babies as autoerotic devices.
Exactly. So with that information, NKOTB did come to my school in 89. So this would have been Like,
so they were huge.
August 26th, they're huge. Around October-ish or November-ish, they came to my school.
Oh, man. Okay. So I've got it down. Richard Marx, Paul Abdul, or NKOTB.
Nice. Okay. You're smart. I'm going to tell you that you are smart in those three.
I'm going to...
Because that is the top three.
Oh, my God. I'm going to go... I'm gonna go with Paul Abdul or NKOTB.
Oh.
And I'm... God, that Paul Abdul song had to be number one. I'm gonna go with Paul Abdul, Cold Hard Snake.
Good. That's such a good choice. But it would be wrong! Because right here waiting, Richard Marx, dead now, I believe.
No way!
Isn't Richard Marx dead?
No!
Well, either way, hang on.
No,
we gotta
check
this.
He's definitely not dead. He's 50 years
old.
What
has he been doing at this point?
He still looks amazing. He actually looks better now than he did when he had that lion's mane.
Are you looking at these pictures of him? He looks way cooler.
Yeah, he's aged well.
Wow.
God, I just wish I was Richard Marx.
Do you see how beautiful his face is? I don't have a face like it. And even with flared hair, or what, fluffed hair, or whatever that's called, he still looks incredible. Wow. All right, we can get lost in Richard Marx all day. But we have to talk about...
number one, then.
He's number one. Number two was Paula Abdul.
Yep, I was close.
Number three was Hanging Tough. If we do this again, I don't want to spoil anything, but I think that they end up usurping here waiting. And number four was Gloria Estefan, Don't Want to Lose You. And piggybacking on what we talked about in the last episode, though, we were talking about Ghostbusters songs. Fucking Bobby Brown with On Her Own, that was Ghostbusters 2. That was on the soundtrack. And that unseated Martika's Toy Soldiers, if you remember that song.
Mm-hmm.
We had toy soldiers. Yep. Or whatever, however that went.
So Bobby Brown was on the soundtrack of Ghostbusters 2, which in 1989 was number 20 at the box office.
Wow.
Here we go. The top five movies.
Oh, God.
August 25th through 27th, 1989, which there was one movie that changed the world that year.
UHF? I think that came out
year. In some ways, but there was a bigger one.
Last Crusade?
Bigger.
Oh, Batman came out that year.
Which sits at number 8 on this list.
Whoa, not number 1, though.
No, I think it came out earlier in the summer, right? It was one of the leading movies that summer, I think.
Yes.
Okay.
I think it was the biggest grosser of that year.
Yeah. So here we go. Top 5 movies. When Harry Met Sally.
Fuck that.
The Abyss.
Great movie.
Lethal Weapon 2.
I love it. I don't care what anyone says. Yeah.
Parenthood.
Oh! I love that movie. I haven't seen it in so many years.
And last movie, Uncle Buck.
Wow. I'm going with the old standby, which I've done in the past few episodes, which is... Lethal Weapon 2 is a franchise. A franchise makes money, and it gets people out to the theater. Lethal Weapon 2, final answer.
So confident, yet so wrong.
Oh, no!
Lethal Weapon 2, once again, you have chosen so poorly, you chose the number 5 movie.
What? Oh, it must have been, but it had to have been number 1 at some point, right?
Probably, because this is a little bit deep into its run. This was 8 weeks into its run. Uncle Buck is number 1.
Oh.
And it's its second weekend.
Wow.
Still at number 1. Movies that debuted that week sucked, though.
Well,
something called The Package, something called Millennium, something called Wire, and then a little movie called The Adventures of Milo and Otis, which I believe did really well on VHS.
Yeah, I saw Milo and Otis at in elementary school.
Oh, wait. There's also another movie, a Fred Savage vehicle.
Uh-oh.
Debuted that and only made $253,000. Do you know what this movie was?
A Fred Savage vehicle? I mean, the only thing I know that he did as a movie was The Wizard. What did he do?
He did something else. Something not as good.
I have no idea.
A little movie
called Fletch Lives. I don't know.
a little movie called Little Monsters.
Oh shit! That stars what's his name? Howie Mandel, right?
I believe so.
And
that made $250,000.
That movie.
And it opened at quite a lot of theaters, 179 theaters.
I loved that movie. Little Monsters is cool. Like, there's an arcade going on. Like, this kid got sucked into a world where he had to get out of. I don't know. Watch it again and tell me you don't love it. We'll do a whole episode where we talk about Little Monsters.
Okay, so we're moving into 1990. That's the tiebreaker. Right. One of us can win it here because we are both at zero.
So here we go. This is going to be probably, I think, the hardest for you.
Oh shit!
Vision of Love, Mariah Carey.
Love that song.
I'm going down in a blaze of glory. That's correct. If wishes came true, sweet sensation. On skinny, bop, 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 blows me away, yeah. On skinny, bop, 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 poison. Or, this is why it's hard, come back to me, Janet Jackson. Ugh, Jackson? Janet Jackson from Rhythm Nation.
Huge record.
One of the best records ever produced is Rhythm Nation. I would say
yeah,
Rhythm
that was
Nation.
That was the Jimmy Jam period, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's how we're breaking it down. I'm immediately taking out that Wishes song. Fuck that
okay.
song.
Okay.
That's out of the running.
Sweet Sensation, sorry.
Now, we're down to Mariah Carey, Bon Jovi, Poison, and Janet. Huge acts, all of them.
How do they... Wait, would you go to a show that said on the bill right now is Mariah Carey,
yes,
John Bon Jovi?
You don't need anything more than Mariah Carey. I'm there.
I would go to that show.
If someone else is paying, I'm going. Okay. Janet is huge. She can't be taken off the list. I'm going to say in an all-out battle, Bon Jovi tops Poison.
Okay.
Always.
But remember, Unskinny Bop was thrown into the fray nonstop.
It was probably their second biggest song ever. But they may have never had a number one hit. Easily, Poison, I don't think. So... Okay. I'm going to keep Mariah there. I'm going to keep Janet there. I'm going to keep Bon Jovi there. For the win. I'm going to say that's one of Janet's lesser songs. I'm going to take it down. Bon Jovi and Mariah. I'm always going to bet on Mariah. It's Mariah Carey, Visions of Love, number one for the win. Or at least the lead.
On skinny, bop, bop. You're right, you son of a bitch.
Wait, I'm right?
It's Vision of Love. Yes. Mariah Carey is number one.
Pro tip, always bet on Mariah. That has been one of my strategies this whole time.
Listen, she was the dark horse in 88, and she became the horse in 1990.
In 1990, she was unbeatable, I feel.
But how cool is that within that dynamic, there were two kind of rock songs. Like, there's Blaze of Glory, which is from Young Guns, not one, but two.
Mm.
And then Unskinny Bop from Poison. The actual number two was Janet Jackson, which she usurped, by the way, just so that you have this fun fact, Cradle of Love from Billy Idol. That's how she got number two. Cradle of Love is what was number two before August 25th, 1990. This is how cool music was. Come Back to Me is a good song, but so is Cradle of Love.
We cannot say the same about films in 1990. It was a dark time, I believe, for film. Okay. Here we go. Top five, August 24th through 26th, 1990. Dark Man.
Oh, shit. That made a lot of money, I think. Okay, go on.
Presumed Innocent.
I don't know. Okay.
My Blue Heaven.
Oh, fuck. That was a Steve Martin joint, right?
Yes.
Oh, God.
A little movie called Ghost.
Oh, shit. How long? Okay.
Final movie, Flatliners.
Oh, Flatliners was such a good movie.
We've got Dark Man, Presumed Innocent, My Blue Heaven, Ghost, and Flatliners.
All right, quick to the point. I'm banking on time because I'm hoping Ghost was out for maybe like 5 weeks before this. I'm going to say Flatliners took the glory because Flatliners starred, what, Julia Roberts?
Kevin Bacon, right?
Kevin Bacon, yeah, and a lot of other people. I just remember watching that on TMC
Was this pre-Pretty Woman, Julia Roberts?
No, I think this is post, which is why... Hang on, I can tell you, but...
I think this might be pre... Pretty Woman. I think Pretty Woman came out in like 93, maybe?
We'll see here. 1990 was Flatliners, of course.
And actually, Pretty Woman was 1990. This was a big year.
So
Julia
I'm
Roberts.
Saying I'm locking in at Flatliners.
So you were absolutely right about your logic with
Ghost. Oh no,
Ghost.
I was wrong. Shit.
It was 7 weeks deep and it's sitting at number two. To your number one movie of that week, Dark Man.
No! Sam Raimi, you dick! How dare he ever have a top movie? God damn it.
So if you remember correctly, in the last game, you won that game with, I think, 1 point. And I've taken back the crown with 1 point in this game.
I don't like that.
So mail me the trophy that we share. Put it in the UPS box and ship it.
Why would Flatliners lose to Dark? Do you remember watching Dark Man? It was terrible.
It was awful.
It's a terrible film.
God awful movie. That was its first week at the box office. Ghost was seven deep. Flatliners was three deep.
God damn it. Okay. All right.
For my money, the best movie out then was sitting at number 15.
Okay.
Pump Up the Volume.
I loved Pump Up the Volume.
It's awesome. And Men at Work was at number 7.
Oh, well then. That stars the brothers. Yep. I don't know what to call them anymore. Sheen or...
Estevez.
Like, what do you call them? I don't know.
I think it's... Estevez is the mother's name.
Estevez is, I think, the actual name.
Well, yeah, Martin Sheen changed his name to Sheen from something. Yeah. But I don't think it was Estevez. I think that was, who the fuck cares? Listen, this was your live to tape show.
Wait, before we leave, what's your Hollywood name? I know mine. I'm Chris Turbo.
That's a good American Gladiator name.
Sure. Turbo. You want to talk to me? I'm Chris Turbo.
CT.
CT. CT Turbo. Or C Turbo.
I want to be TJ Jumbo. We could be like the new Barbarian twins. Chris Turbo and TJ Jumbo in Maximum Impact.
I hope people know who the Barbarian twins are.
I think we're the only two. Next to the Barbarian twins themselves, we're the only two people that remember those motherfuckers. They are definitely doing landscaping somewhere in the San Gabriel Valley.
but they're good at it because they built up so many muscles.
And believe me, you sit back on your deck chair with a Mai Tai and just enjoy the view. Life doesn't get any better than this.
I'm pretty sure that their last name is Paul, by the way. It's like Peter Paul and Patience Paul. I don't even know the names. I don't know.
That's like the name of a black female R&B star.
Patience Paul.
Anyway, that was your Live to Tape Show. Go to www.livetotapeshow.com. Follow us on Twitter at Live to Tape Show. Go to iTunes. Find us there. Rate and review us. We'll be back next week.